from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hello again, Bill DeYoung here with the Catalyst Sessions from the St. Pete Catalyst. Thank you so much for joining us. Listen, the Brendan McMahon Gallery in Gulfport opened 13 months ago on Beach Boulevard and has become a cornerstone of the expansive arts community in that fun little town on Boca Ciega Bay. The artist herself has instigated change and progress in Gulfport and Pinellas County. She organized last fall's first curated Art Jones tour, for example, and she's also one of the most respected artists and arts organizations in our area. We taped this morning, and I'm still in my first cup of coffee, which is why I'm stumbling. So anyway, I want to say hello to Brendan McMahon. Hey.
Hey, Bill, how are you? That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Well it's amazing what you've done there, and I really do want to talk about your work, which is so spectacular. So for the folks at home, and for my edification too, are you a potter or a ceramicist, and what's the difference?
Yeah, that's always a tricky question. Among potters, I'm a potter. In the wider world, I call myself a ceramic artist. And the difference is sort of personal. I think for me, the distinction between saying to people on the street or coming in the gallery that I'm a potter, that always automatically assumes functional work and kitchen and bowls. And so part of it for me is I don't do that work as a body of work to sell, though I have done that for myself. I just want to take that idea out of their head that you're not going to find cups and bowls in my body of work. So I say ceramic artist, meaning I use the medium of clay to do expressions, meditative vessel, art pieces on the wall, dimensional pieces like that. So for me, that's the distinction. But ultimately, I'm a potter.
What is sagar firing? I mean, is it a glaze thing? I mean, we're going to look at some of your work later. I have some images here, but that's what always comes up. And I mean, the process is always something I'm fascinated with. And you do what's called sagar firing. Can you explain that?
Yeah, and the pots are right behind me here in the gallery. Sagar firing is a firing that's in the primitive fire family. So when we say primitive fire, often there's not the use of glazes. There's the use of natural material and smoke and fire to affect the surface of the piece. So raku, barrel fire, pit fire, and sagar fire are all a part of that smoke fire family. With my work, I throw the vessel on the potter's wheel, and the first thing you'll notice is I hand polish each pot with a stone, and so it looks like polished stone. It's actually polished clay, so it's very, very smooth, and that's one of the first things that people say is, wow, this is so smooth, because clay isn't usually that smooth. So I work with a fine clay body, and I hand burnish it, and my burnishing tool is just a stone I've been using for truly like 20, 21 years. The pieces are fired the first time and they're white because it's a white clay body, a porcelain clay body. Then they go in my sagar kiln, which is basically a big clay pot in a gas kiln. And they're wrapped with grasses and seaweed and sawdust and rope and wire. And they're smoked in there for about 8 hours. As the material burns, it fumes and vaporizes color on the surface, so it gives it these soft blushes of color, this black and white mottled effect. So the piece you're looking at is carved and burnished. So the carved is like, I carved it as though there's a river running through the vessel. And that black is the carbon from the smoke, and that orange hue is the mineral fume. In this case, it's an iron fume. So as the materials combust, the minerals literally ride the flame within the kiln and lick the surface of the pot, giving delicate blushes of color.
How much trial and error went into like perfecting this? Because I'm thinking a lot of broken vessels along the way, a lot of things that look really crappy. But this is amazing. I mean, the river thing, when you were talking about wrapping it and carving, I'm looking at this piece and going, yeah. I mean, did you break a lot of things along the way?
It's what we affectionately call, excuse me, a lot of broken pots and a lot of ugly pots.
Yeah,
so all the beauty I've created now, there were a lot of pieces that were not so much. So every potter has a very healthy shard pile. If they're a good potter, there's a lot of stuff they've thrown away or a lot of stuff they've given to people just to get it out of their studio. But for 25 years, I've been a full-time ceramic artist. And the equation used to be, you know, one or two good pots for every 10 or 20. Yeah. And I flipped the equation. So I get one or two bad pots for every 10 or 20. And bad is a relative term for me, of course, because, you know, just because I don't like it, it doesn't mean it's a bad pot.
Well, you know, so there's an audience for everything. Describe what I like these pieces with the bamboo on it. I think you can see this here. What are we looking at here? What's the process on something like this?
Yeah, so this is a little Sagafard pot. So it's a 6-inch piece. I throw it. I create that nice shoulder there. I have the lid. And then I make these little pit-fired clay beads, and I pit-fire the beads. And there's holes in them. And I use the bead to prop up the wood handle. So this is a really nice tiger eye bamboo handle that an artist friend of mine in Georgia grows his own bamboo, and he ships the bamboo down to me. And it just, I love the combination of the soft blushes of color. In this piece, you can see the iron that you're seeing, and that's an iron flash, actually traveled with the grasses. Those are grass marks on the surface. And it almost looks like a Japanese or Chinese brushwork on the surface.
Yes.
We have these very soft blushes of color. Wherever you see the white bill, that's the actual clay body coming through. Mm. So I always have a white canvas as the pot, and then all the blushes of color, vibrant or dark or deep, are on the surface of that white. So that's what you're seeing there.
You started, I want to go back because your story is so amazing, but you started as a potter, right? I mean, you literally started, I remember your story, we're talking New York, you're from New York.
Yes.
Right? Can we talk about your journey? And I wondered how, you know, you told me an amazing story once about how you took a pottery class and went, wow, this is cool.
This is it, yeah.
You were in broadcast journalism?
I was on the other side of the camera. I was you. Okay. And I started in public radio, so I was a journalist in public radio. So first I had the mic in front of me. Yeah. And then about a year and a half later, I transitioned over to television. So I worked for ABC and NBC affiliates in Albany, New York. So it was the state capital. It was back when Governor Mario Cuomo was the governor. A nod to his son, Andrew, who's, you know, taking his place there. But I was in all these interviews, and I would go to the state legislature, and I would do all of that. And I did that for about 10 years. And I loved it. It was wonderful. But it wasn't my fire in my belly. So as good as I was at it, and as much as I appreciated it, I felt like, it's not so much. And part of it was the chasing fires sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Well, there's not a lot of you involved in that. I mean, you know, I'm gonna just jumpstart something else, because the idea for me is that you can't really internalize that work. I mean, what you're doing now, there's a lot of you in it. But in those days, it's, you know, I think I understand that chasing the fire truck is like, where's the creative output in this? I'm just doing a job. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. So continue your story. I was just winging it and theorizing.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you're in a local news format. So that's very true. And I guess on some level, I knew there was something more. So I literally quit my job to do a 3-month cross-country trip. And everybody in the newsroom was like, you're going to quit? And I went, yeah, I'm going to just go find out what I'm supposed to do in the world. So I went on a 3-month journey. And I proudly say I hiked every mountain and climbed through every canyon I could find from here to California and back.
Wow.
I came back and I was completely broke. I had no job.
Did you find it while you were out there?
I didn't. I was like, I was kind of looking for a place to move, and I had a wonderful time, but I came back like, all right, now I'm in Albany. Now what do I do?
Now I have no job and I have no money and no purpose.
And no purpose. And it was actually, from a spiritual point of view, it was a really big shedding. Because I found that I ego identified with my role as a journalist a lot more than I had realized I did.
Right. Oh, no, I know what that means. Yeah.
Right? Sure. And so when you shed that identity, the question is, well, who really am I?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I don't know, but I'm about to discover. And in the effort to discover, I said, you know, I've always wanted to take a pottery class. Until I figure out who I am, I'd like to take a pottery class. And I always honor my mother, and it's her 83rd birthday today.
Oh, it's my wife's birthday today too. So.
Oh, another good Gemini.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Happy birthday to your mom.
Yes, thank you, and to your wife. Well, my mom bought me my first 10-week pottery class, and so I always give her credit for starting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say, Bill, the first night of the class, I put my hands in the clay, and I thought, oh, my God, this is it. It was like from a download from above.
It was literally transformative like that, like.
It was incredible. I've always worked with my hands, so that was familiar, but it was something about the smoothness and the clay and the water and the plasticity. I felt like I was home.
Is it sort of like, you know, the energy, I don't know, I got all cosmic here, but I mean, the energy kind of came out. It's like, you can see the potential in what you're doing. I can see that I can make something here, you know, that's going to come out of here. That's what I'm talking about. The whole sort of, I can feel the, you know, as they say, the energy coming from my brain through my hands into this medium.
Yeah.
And the potential is limitless.
It wasn't a mental thing at all. I actually was so in it. I just thought, this is insane. I actually went home that night and I looked in the mirror and I said, so I want to be a potter. And my reflection said, you're crazy. And I said, I know. I was 32. I know. How are you going to make a living? I have no idea. So I had this conversation, you know, the devil and the angel.
Oh, right.
And I went, I don't know, but this is the first time I have felt this kind of fire and passion. And that was it. I don't know how I'll do it. And I always tell every artist, it's literally one step in front of the other. And you don't have to know. But you have to be open to what the path will reveal for you, to try it, see if it's right, to another, which is what ended me in a gallery, believe it or not.
Well, we're going to lead up to our long winding road. It's going to bring us there. But what were the early years like? I mean, big shard pile, right?
Big shard pile, very small bank account for many years. Right. I literally would collect cans in New York. They passed the bottle bill and I would collect cans and I would turn them in and I would make money and I worked for potters. What I did was anything I could do that could generate some money that was related to clay so I could A, learn, mm-hmm. and I could be doing what I wanted to do, I would do. So I was a studio assistant. I learned that in order to teach, you literally need to know 5 minutes more than your students. So I became a teacher pretty quickly and just did everything. But you know what? I was never not happy. I was so completely happy. My mother was just like, really? That this is what you left broadcasting for? And I was like, yeah, it's great. You know, I was thrilled.
What a great story. I mean, kudos to you, as they say. You know, I mean, there's so many times during when I was a full-time journalist that I thought, you know, there's got to be something else. I mean, it's great to, you know, it's great to write. It's great to, I love talking with people.
Yeah.
And I went through some other things and I tried acting and stuff. And I'm glad to be back where I am at the same time. Using one's hands. I get such a chill thinking that I can't make anything. I can make spaghetti, you know, that's about it. So eventually though, you started selling stuff.
Yeah. I did actually right away. I started, I took classes and I right away started at farmers market. So I would sell my work there. And then pretty much within a few months, I started doing local regional art shows, not unlike the Gulfport Art Walk and just little ditties like that, the farmers market. And then I found out there was this whole world of juried art shows.
Yeah.
And so I started applying and I started getting in. And I guess the thing that I didn't know back then, but I was told was, my work was very different, and so I got into good shows fairly quickly, and I'm one of those people that if you tell me I can't do something, it's the very thing I'm going to excel at. So fortunately, I had a few people say, you can't do that, and I went, all right, this is a good opportunity to prove otherwise, and obviously, I loved it, and I had it within me. So I started after the first year doing juried art shows, and I did juried art shows across the country till 2019. That was my last year of juried art shows.
Well, you know, segue time, because eventually you arrived here. So my question would be, how did you find Gulfport? And if you say, you know, I turned right on 49th Street, we're shutting this interview down. How did Gulfport come into your life? this is also a great story because I know it, but
yeah.
let's tell everybody. Like,
yeah.
So here you are.
I think at some point 15 years ago, I needed to do art shows beyond the region of New York. So and in the winter, there's nothing up there. So I started coming to Florida.
Yeah.
To do the art
show. Yeah, I've heard that. That everybody kind of comes down here. Yeah.
And so I was staying at hostels. There were no Airbnbs at that time.
Yeah.
And I would take a day to drive all over and explore. And at the nighttime, I rented space at what was then the St. Pete Clay Company, which is now the Morian Center for Clay. Uh-huh. I would rent space there. And one day I was driving around and I found myself in Gulfport. But I didn't know it was called Gulfport. And I got out of my van. I'm like, oh, this place is really cool. Where am I? And I just kind of tooled around. And then the next day I got lost again and I stopped at a big driveway. It was a real estate office. And I asked her where I was the day before. And she said, you were in Gulfport. And so that's how I found it. And I just truly, sorry, I have something in my eye.
Oh,
I just love the town. It's a wonderful town. And it just,
yeah,
it, kind of like how the clay hit me. Gulfport, I didn't mentally know anything about Gulfport, except I was like, I could actually live here. It was the first time I felt that way.
Oh, and did you know there was a kind of a healthy arts community there?
I didn't. I didn't. But once I was here, but you know what I did? I felt the vibe. I felt the openness. I felt the lesbian gay. I saw the creativity here. And that was it. I mean, as an artist, you don't think there's a healthy arts community. You just go, this is my tribe. And that it was really the healthy arts community.
So was it in you, though, Brenda, to, I'm leaving New York, or was it just the draw, the pull of Gulfport was so great that you had to leave New York?
Yeah, it was a process. I eventually realized I was spending more time down here than up there, and it just made sense. I never really thought I'd live in Florida, but it was actually easier because I fire outside. It was easier to do all the work in a warmer climate. So ultimately I just said, yeah, I'm ready for the transition. So it took a few years, but I have loved it. And when I finally settled here, it felt nice to be here 12 months a year.
Before I continue with that, I want to look at some more of your work because I have some, I can figure out where my pictures are. Yes, this one. This is the wall art, and I'm so fascinated with this. And I would love it if you could talk with regard to these I think this stuff is fascinating.
Thank you.
And first of all, tell us what you call this. Is it wall art? Is it a wall puzzle? Is it a mosaic?
Yeah, I call them sculptural wall murals. So it's like a mural.
I never would have got there.
Yeah, and I say that, I mean, this is my term, but it's sculptural in that I alter and pull and stretch the clay. So often you see a ceramic piece on the wall, it's flat or it's carved. So what I've done is I've created a way to create three different layers of dimension. So I can carve, I can stretch, I can alter, I can have the flat surface. And then the way I glaze it is fairly unusual. I also layer and feather the colors on these three regions to create that sense of dimension and movement. So for me, they're sculptural in nature and they're wall murals. So that's what I came up with.
Are they created, dumb question maybe, I mean, are they created as a piece and then you cut them, or you literally, you know, I guess you project or something and then work on it one piece at a time? I'm curious. I mean, it reminds me of one of those little puzzles where you slide the things around. You know?
A lot of people ask that question.
Yeah.
And you could do it one of two ways. I could roll out a big slab, create it, and then cut it, which I don't do. Or I could, what I do is I create the individual tiles. I lay them next to each other on the table as though it is a slab, but they're pre-cut.
Okay.
And so I'm always working on all my wall pieces as one whole piece that's made up of individual parts. And just so you know, Bill, the reason for that is to roll out a slab of clay that big, like a big pizza dough, it's very unwieldy and it would hurt my back and it would be a mess. So it's just
I get that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how they're done.
So, and I have another one here. Last night I used the word theater. And made her laugh. So it is, we'll call this my theatrical voice. Okay. Boom, 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 boom. So I gotta get faster at this.
Do that. If I could tell you a story about how I went on the wall, I was invited to exhibit in Thailand back in, I think it was 2007. And in order to pay for my trip to Thailand, I applied for a New York State grant from the Foundation for the Arts. And I was awarded a grant, and it was a grant for an artist who was going to have an unusual experience out of which would come a new body of work. For me, I had been a vessel potter that whole time, and I was ready to really push to go on the wall more broadly.
Yes.
I won the grant. I went to Thailand. I spent 6 weeks there, and I studied the ceramic work of Thailand with the intention of bringing that inspiration back to America and to work on the wall. And so my first piece was called Textures of Thailand. And the textures in Thailand is what really jumped me into creating such textural work, I have to say. Because I went from this very refined, burnished, polished body of work to this very dimensional, sculptural, textural body of work, the yin and the yang.
Well, this piece here, I'm looking at inlays here. Is the river, is this like a mosaic effect also?
It's like a mosaic effect. So yeah. It's a bit mixed media. So I used crushed glass in this piece. And so I create it knowing I'm going to use this crushed glass as this moving river. The beauty of the glass is that it's on edge as the light hits it. The sparkle on this piece is magnificent. So you've got all the delicate colors, you've got all of the earthiness of the clay, and then that sort of sparkly bling of the glass, which is reminiscent of a beautiful sunny day looking at a river and feeling that sparkle there.
Let's talk about your gallery. I mean, are all these, I don't know how many of the pieces that I nicked off your website still exist at the gallery or for sale, or are they in private homes now? And
here's that piece.
There we go. Here's what's there.
Above my head.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I can move my computer here and give you a virtual real tour, right? So how do you do this? There you go. There's that piece.
There it is. Okay. Yeah. Beautiful. So,
and then I have these long, narrow pieces. And, of course, I have my vessels right next to it. So I've got 15 artists in the gallery, but I have a significant amount of my work in here as a good representation.
You have 15? Yeah, a cross-section of what you do, but you have 15 artists in the gallery. This is what's known as a curated gallery.
Yes.
Which means you don't just take anybody who's got something for sale. It has to meet a certain criteria. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I love there's so many incredible local artists. So I'm definitely predominantly local artists. But in my heart, what I wanted to do is, in the gallery, I grew up at fine art and contemporary craft juried shows. So I grew up in the high-end, beautiful. So I wanted to create a small juried art show in Gulfport. So I've got glass, and I've got wood, and I've got ceramics, and I've got mixed media and pastel and digital art. So I kind of have a little bit of everything. I've got 3 blown glass, fused glass, and reverse painting on glass. So, you know, I've got like a little bit of everything, and I have 3 jewelers. So you come in here, and it's a nice little art show.
Let's talk about the Art Jones Tour, which you started last year. To get it out there, I mean, the difference between that and, say, the art and gallery walk they do twice a month there in normal times. I mean, tell us what the Art Jones Tour is.
So the Art Jones Tour, you did the interview last year. That was actually the 3rd year of the tour. Mm-hmm. So we started it, I think it was 2017. So before I had the gallery, I had my studio, and I was here in town, and I thought, how is it we have such a creative town and we don't have a studio tour? And to me, I love sharing process. So you ask how I make it, and I love showing that in the studio and sharing it. Like on my blog, I share it all the time. And so the intention of the tour was to put the artist in their natural environment, not in a booth, not in a gallery, but you want to see the paintbrushes, you want to see the turpentine, you want to see the clay materials, you want to see the torch for the glass blower. So I love that idea of having a studio tour where you get to see, because people, I mean, I do it and it is remarkable to me. This piece of clay becomes this pot. How does that happen? And so it's transformation. And everything about life is transformation. And so the studio tour is an opportunity to bring those who don't know but are curious and interested into it, the incubator of transformation. Whereas the Art Walk on the Street, another beautiful venue, but everybody comes together so that the public can go in one spot and go back and forth and see, again, meet the artists, very important in my opinion, and then also see the work and have the conversation.
Yeah, they complement one another.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're open. Did you reopen the gallery limited time now?
I did.
COVID hours happening?
Yeah, COVID and kind of summer hours. What I found it in my first year is it gets pretty quiet in the summer. So I've reestablished the gallery hours. I've got Tuesday, so I'm open Tuesdays from 11 to 4. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I open at 11. Thursday I close at 6, Friday and Saturday I'm closing at 7. So it's enough to kind of catch that evening and that weekend vibe. It gives me enough time still in the studio, which is always the challenge.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and so that's what I've got. So I've got 4 days a week now. So
how long have you lived in Gulfport now exactly?
I've been here for 13 years.
Okay. So you feel like part of the community now. I didn't realize it had been that long. I thought you were maybe here for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're comfortable. You got a million friends. Everything's good. You know.
Yeah.
So I guess it goes without saying for that many years.
I have a lot of friends, and I'm very active in the Merchant Chamber organization. So One of the things that I tend to do is I tend to be an activist. So I started Art Jones when I was in New York. I started 2 studio tours there. Yes. So I tend to be involved in the arts community. So not only do I have a ton of friends, but I feel really well connected. And for someone who has a new business in town, who's a part of the infrastructure, it actually is very comforting because it's like you have a team behind you. They say, hey, Brenda, you should try this, or, you know, let's support Brenda with this, or they teach me. So it's really very nice. And especially they're so supportive of an art business that it just feels like a really nice marriage of the two.
So it's working out. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Art Jones 2020. I mean, is there any sort of thought about whether that's going to, I don't know, happen?
Yeah, we're actually in discussion. I've got a core of 8 to 12 artists. You know, every year some people step out and other people step in. It is juried. Yeah. And right now, before we open it up to the jury, we're actually trying to figure it out. I think the hardest part of this time is figuring out what to do, because in order to do something, you have to plan, but you don't want to do all this planning and then find out you can't do it. And so artists are inviting people into their homes, and what I'm finding is there's a lot of hesitation about this year. So we're thinking about how can we do it that takes care of those needs, and maybe we'll create a new Art Jones tour for 2020, 2021. We're not sure. So very much
sure seems to be the phrase that pays these days. Nobody really knows.
Yeah.
No, so let's very briefly, because we're almost out of time, but what's your website so people know where to go and if they can't visit the gallery to see more of what you do?
BrendaMcMahonGallery.com is the gallery website. We've got all the artists up there with their bios. We have an online gallery. So one of the things that the pandemic did for me is it allowed me to put over 200 works of art online. So the gallery is open 24/7. We're celebrating fathers this month, so we've got a 10% off sale for Father's Day. So BrendaMcMahonGallery.com is the website, and then from there you can find anything you need, including how to get here and come visit us, because there's nothing like seeing it in person. And of course, if you come and I'm not here, I also have 2 other artists that are representing me in the gallery, and they're in the gallery. So we have here Anna Ayers. Mm-hmm. She was the Creative Pinellas Emerging Artist Award winner this year. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, the fused glass, is Diane Bragg, who also would be here in the gallery. So they're both kind of taking some hours and sharing responsibility. So it really is nice. In year 2, I have a little bit of a team behind me. Yes. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Well, continued success to you, Brenda McMahon.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Brenda McMahon. If you haven't figured that out, and I look forward to seeing you out there in person one of these days. But thanks
for joining us. Me too. Me too, Bill. You stay safe and thank you.
See you soon, dear.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.